Welcome to the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. I'm John Riley. The Middle East Report connects you to the people, places, and geography of what you read in the Bible and current news happening in that region of the world. It's so important that you're connected. And on today's show, we've got a very special guest for you. Jonathan Tobin joins us. Jonathan Tobin is editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate. He's the senior contributor for The Federalist. He also contributes to Newsweek. He hosts the JNS podcast, Think Twice, with Jonathan Tobin. He received over 60 journalism awards, and he studied history at Columbia University. Jonathan, welcome to the Middle East Report. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that are happening in the Middle East, in Israel, and I appreciate you joining us today on the Middle East Report. Jonathan, you are the editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate. This is a news site, a news service. I want to give you an opportunity right here at the top of the show to just tell everybody about what you guys do, because truthfully, finding accurate, unbiased news out there on Israel and the Jewish people is not real easy these days.
No, it's a real challenge. There's so much, well, we know there's so much bias in the media in general, especially the corporate legacy media. And that's all the more so when it comes to covering Israel and the Middle East. JNS was created to provide a place for people to go where they could get the story about Israel straight without the left-wing bias that distorts all the coverage that you see on so much of the media, that's including a lot of the Jewish media, which is very liberal. We're unique in that respect. We provide daily service where you're getting all the news about Israel from Israel, as well as news about here in the United States, politics, the Jewish world, with a tremendous array of not just news reporters, but columnists, stars like Caroline Glick, Melanie Phillips, Ruthie Bloom, and myself, who are providing really cutting edge commentary and analysis of everything that's going on. You can go to it. It's a free service. You can go to our website, jns.org. That's jns.org. Subscribe to our free twice-a-day newsletter. Gets you everything you need to know about what's going on in Israel and the Middle East, the Jewish world, politics, here in the United States as well, and updating you also with our full array of great podcasts that we do. I do both my own weekly show and a daily show as well. JNS is giving people something they never had before. And there's a tremendous hunger for it. And as important as it was before October 7th of last year, I think, if it didn't exist, we would have had to invent it after October 7th, because there's more need than ever to find out what's really going on and to sweep away the bias. And that's what we try to do every day, Sunday through Friday. And that's what JNS is all about.
You know, Jonathan, why is it that we can't just have good journalism out there that just is truthful and accurate like what you guys are doing? And you mentioned left-leaning news media outlets out there. Why in the world do they try to confuse everything and just try to have all this bias against Israel and the Jewish people? You know, I've always wondered what's behind all of that?
Well, listen, this is about the culture. This is actually a bigger story than just the prejudice against Israel and anti-Semitism and the Jews. This is about the culture of journalism in 2024. Everybody knows, you open the New York Times, supposedly the paper of record in this country, and certainly it's the biggest news organization that we have. There is bias in every story, every headline. And that's not just even the news, that's in the arts and, everything else. And you ask a good question. Why? Why do people do that? It's because journalism has changed. Young journalists who have been indoctrinated in the same crackpot woke theories that have taken over the rest of our colleges and universities, come into the business in the last generation, and they believe their job is activism and political advocacy, not reporting the truth, not, you know, the traditional role of the journalist, which is to cover everybody, you know, with the same, you know, dogged determination to be against any, you know, to bring accountability to anybody who is in power, and whether they're on the left or the right. You know, classic example, Stephanie Ruhle, you know, big shot NBC reporter. You know, she's on Bill Maher's show this past week, and she's basically advocating not just that she's for Kamala Harris over Donald Trump, but, you know, that's bad enough for a journalist to basically endorse a candidate. You know, that was a deep sin, you know, in an earlier generation. I'm old enough to remember when no journalist would be caught dead doing something like that. But she basically defended Harris for not having any accountability. You know, that it's fine. And as far as she's concerned, it's fine that she doesn't tell us what she believes. It's enough that she's not Donald Trump. That sums up modern journalism, contemporary journalism today. Now, the consequences we know for our democracy, for that kind of prejudice in the coverage of a presidential election, are enormous. They're almost, you know, beyond belief. The consequences for the coverage of Israel, you know, it's, you know, and that conflict, you know, are in some ways, you know, just as terrible and in some ways worse, because what this generation of journalists, you know, in the past, you know, those of us who covered this issue of media bias against Israel, what we were usually uncovering was sloppiness and above all, ignorance about the history of the Middle East. You know, journalists, you know, they think what happened yesterday is history. What happened the day before yesterday is ancient history. That's a tradition, you know, journalists. And it's even more so now where they come out of, you know, school with communications degrees rather than learning history or literature. And it's a deep problem, but it's compounded now because they've been indoctrinated in these woke theories like critical race theory, which teach them to divide the world into two groups of, you know, in an, you know, interminable war, you know, people of color who are always victims under all circumstances, and, you know, white people who are always oppressors. And they have classified Jews and Israelis as white. You know, now Jews think of themselves, rightly so, as, you know, people with a long history of being persecuted. We're a minority. We're a small minority in this country. And we have a history of persecution. But in the eyes of the woke, we're not a minority. We're oppressors. And they apply this to the Middle East conflict and decide that the Palestinians are the people of color, the Jews are the white people. Now, anybody like you, I believe, who knows anything about Israel knows that that is, you know, nonsense on stilts, because, you know, half or the majority of Israelis are Mizrahi. They trace their origins to the Middle East or North Africa. By the definitions of the American left, they're people of color, you know. And the Palestinians are not black. The conflict between Jews and Arabs over the land of Israel is one about religion. It is not one about race. But Americans, and young Americans especially, have been taught this big lie that this is an extension, that this is the Palestinian war to destroy Israel is the moral equivalent of the struggle for civil rights in the United States. That's insane. You know, it's not just not factual, it's nuts. And yet that is how so much of the news media, to circle back to your question, that is why so much of the news media covers Israel as if it's in the wrong, no matter what it does. There's no measure of self-defense it can use that can be defensible. No matter what the Palestinians do, including atrocities like October 7th, an orgy of mass murder, rape, torture, kidnapping, wanton destruction, that in the eyes, you know, when you view it from the view of woke ideology and critical race theory, it's justified resistance. You know, it's all good. The same applies to terrorists like Hezbollah and their paymasters, in Iran. That's why we have so much prejudice against Israel in the media.
And that's why we need the Jewish News Syndicate. JNS.org is where you can get accurate, unbiased news. And we're talking to Jonathan Tobin. He is the editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate. And we want to turn now here on the Middle East Report and talk about some of the things that are going on in Israel. Obviously, since October 7th, 2023, Jonathan, Israel has been at war. You mentioned, the atrocities that happened. And now, of course, since October 8th, 2023, Israel has been at war with Hezbollah in the northern part of Israel. The intensity of that has increased. Can you just give us, your perspective on the war fronts that Israel is facing and, why it matters to us here in this country and why it matters to the state of Israel?
Well, right now, most people are focused, rightly, the focus of most of the fighting is moved to the north and the border with Lebanon and Hezbollah. The war in Gaza continues. Hamas has been largely defeated, but it's a slow, methodical mopping up operation that is ongoing. It's dangerous for the Israel Defense Forces, but they continue to make progress in their slow, steady campaign to destroy Hamas and to ensure that they can never again rule Gaza, never again attack Israel the way they did on October 7th or in any other way. At the same time, for most of this last year, we've been ignoring what's happened in the north. Since October 8th, Hezbollah has been firing into northern Israel, and what they were able to accomplish, while Israel was obviously preoccupied with the war against Hamas, was to depopulate a large section of northern Israel. Essentially, 60,000 Israelis were forced to flee from their homes near the border. And that whole section of Israel was more or less depopulated. And the point is that they couldn't defend these people with just the Iron Dome and anti-missile defenses, because Hezbollah, even though they are forbidden by a UN resolution from deploying forces near the border, they move right up to the border, and they don't just shoot missiles, up into the air and to land inside Israel, as Hamas has done. They fire anti-tank missiles, anti-personnel weapons into Israel directly. You can't shoot that down with an Iron Dome or with an anti-missile defense. So basically people, that there's no defense against that other than shooting back. So, but Israel, it's a small country. Its army, has an amazing record, but it can't do everything, at one time. It does not have a two-war, capability. So it had to live with the fact that Hezbollah, they would shoot back. They try to, deter Hezbollah. But over the last 12 months, Hezbollah has gotten away with just, treating northern Israel like a shooting gallery. And, Hezbollah is a bloodthirsty terrorist organizations killed many Americans as well as Israelis and Jews around the world. And it got to the point where, okay, most of the job is done in Gaza. It's time to do something about this crisis along the northern border. And Israel has been attacking Hezbollah, hitting them hard, forcing them to pay, a heavy price in terms of their personnel and their munitions, their stockpiles, in order to force them and their Iranian paymasters to stop firing on Israel, to move back from the border. It's a delicate situation because Israel doesn't really want to invade Lebanon, that's not a first option, just like it didn't want to have to invade Gaza. They were perfectly happy leaving them in Gaza alone until October 7th made that impossible. And right now, Israel's goal is to increase the price that Hezbollah is paying for the pain it inflicted on Israel. And, we don't know how this campaign is going to turn out, like any military campaign, like any war. What we do know is that the United States is doing everything it can to ensure that Hezbollah survives, that Israel's campaign doesn't succeed. It's pushing for a ceasefire with both Hamas and Hezbollah. Now, in theory, a ceasefire sounds great, right? Like everybody stops shooting, nobody gets killed anymore. But what this means, if a ceasefire in Gaza means Hamas survives, Hamas wins. Ceasefire with Hezbollah right now, without a commitment from them to pull back from the border and to stop firing indefinitely, not just for 2 weeks, you know, even for 2 months, but for good. How can people move back to their homes in northern Israel? That's, you know, anything short of that is unacceptable to Israelis, unacceptable to their government. Whatever people in Israel think of their government, it's a democracy. You know, Netanyahu is controversial. He has his fans, his people hate him. Don't be distracted by that. There is a consensus in Israel that northern Israel must be protected. Hezbollah must be defeated. And right now, Biden, you know, the Biden-Harris administration's priority has, as it's always been for their whole 4 years in office, to appease Iran, not to, you know, get on their wrong side. And, you know, Hezbollah is their main weapon. And that's what the much of the diplomatic activity is about. And we don't know how that's going to work out in the next 2 days or in the next 2 weeks. But when you hear talk about ceasefire, it's not about peace. It's about saving Hezbollah in Iran and also Hamas.
See, Jonathan, when I hear the Democratic side talk about the war in Israel, one of the phrases that they use is Israel has a right to exist, but, and then they put that big but in there and they just begin to talk about, wow, we need to use measured response in Lebanon with Hezbollah. We need to use measured response in Hamas. And as you said, we need to have a ceasefire. And what I hear you saying is that literally, it seems what the Biden-Harris administration, and this will continue with the Harris administration, should she be elected, they want the war to end so that, as you said, once again, Hamas and Hezbollah can survive, and it's not going to be good for Israel.
It's not going to be good for Israel. It's also not good for the United States because it's strengthening Iran, which is an enemy of the United States, an enemy of the West. It's a crazy kind of policy. You know, it's inherited from the Obama era, where Obama really wanted a realignment of American policy in the Middle East away from allies like the United States, like Israel and Saudi Arabia, and a rapprochement with Iran. Biden picked that up, and Harris is a supporter of it too. And it's against American interests, you know, as much as, if not more than, it's against Israel's interests. And that's why it's so terrible when we see them still trying to appease Iran, which, thanks to Biden, you know, is now more or less a threshold nuclear power. And that's a real problem. Now, you know, it's all also a man, you know, when you speak of this dual message, Biden and Harris have been talking out of both sides of their mouth about the war against Israel for the last year. They always say, yes, they support Israel's right to exist. They support Israel's right to self-defense. You know, Harris keeps saying that. But how it exercises that right matters, which is to say, it doesn't want them to exercise that right at all. That's what it always amounts to. And, you know, that's good enough to please some people who just want to hear, yes, I support Israel. But, you know, there was an interesting article. You know, sometimes you have to listen to what the other side is saying to each other. And there was a really interesting article in the hard left magazine, online magazine Slate this week, in which one of their leading writers basically said, listen to all you left-wingers who are unhappy when Kamala Harris says she supports Israel, she supports Israel's rights to defense. You know, you're not paying attention to what's important. She's sending you the signal that she doesn't really, you know, she's sending you a message on Israel that she's not for Israel. Why don't you listen? And the same goes for people who actually do support Israel, as well as those, you know, that Slate is writing for, who actually hate Israel. Listen to the messages. They are telling us what they really believe through their policies, not their, you know, sort of amorphous rhetoric.
The media is literally trying to remake and reshape Kamala Harris to be somebody who's a moderate, somebody who is good for Israel. I've even heard her, and I'm not going to completely, you know, get everything right here, but basically what she said is, well, I've met with all kinds of people in the Middle East, and, you know, I've done this and done that. But of course, she was not at the speech that Netanyahu made in Congress. I mean, she met with him after, and that meeting wasn't very good.
And it had a very, it was a nasty meeting. There was no photos. She was desperate not to be pictured sitting behind Netanyahu addressing Congress, because that would have been bad for her left-wing constituency. They would not have liked that. As I said, she's sending all these messages. She has her husband, who is Jewish, which is fine, who's sort of a prop. He's not someone who, he credits her with, rekindling an interest in Israel and Judaism. And that's probably true, because it's good for her career. He's someone who actually has no real interest, never had any interest in his heritage or his faith. His children are not Jewish, which was a great disappointment to some left-wing Jewish publications that after Harris was elected vice president, they wanted to turn his daughter, who's a fashion model of some sort, into some kind of icon. And she blew them off. She said, "I'm not Jewish. I know my father now talks about being interested in Jewish. That's not the way I was raised. That's not what our household was about." It's all a game. It's all PR. And it's politics as usual in some ways. Campaigns always remake candidates. There's nothing new about that. But what's, in Harris's case, it's especially egregious because, there's no there with her, and never has been. She is entirely cynical. She is, is a terrible opportunist. She's nothing but an opportunist. And but at her core, she is a person of the left. And that is her constituency. That, the Democratic Party has moved to the left. The two parties have exchanged their identities when it comes to support for Israel over the last, say, 60, 70 years. In 60, 70 years ago, the Republicans were divided on Israel. There wasn't so much an anti-Israel wing, but there was a large percentage of Republicans really didn't care about Israel, were not particularly supportive. Some were supportive. And the Democrats were largely united as a pro-Israel party back in the 50s and 60s. Today, the Republicans are a lockstep pro-Israel party. You can count one member of Congress who is not a supporter of Israel in the entire Republican, in both caucuses, House and Senate. Democrats are deeply divided, and they're divided generationally as well as ideologically. And all the energy, of course, is on the left and the activist wing, and they are deeply hostile to Israel. That's why Biden and Harris have wanted this war over, because it's bad politics for them. That's why they want the war that's why they want Hezbollah let off the hook, because they don't want this to be ongoing, because it plays badly with their base, which hates the idea of Israel, fighting and defend itself, and that the United States has anything to do with that, even as the United States tries to undermine Israel, slow-walking arms deliveries and betraying it with diplomacy aimed at helping its enemies survive.
Two different viewpoints when it comes to Israel between Harris and Trump, that is for sure, and people need to understand that. Well, we just have a few minutes left here. We're talking to Jonathan Tobin, editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate. You can find out more. Go to their website. Get accurate news, jns.org. I want to give you just a couple of minutes to talk to people who are listening. We've got millions of people who love Israel and the Jewish people. What's your message to them who are standing with Israel right now during the very difficult time that Israel and the Jewish people are going through?
Well, my message to them is kind of the same message that I'm trying to give to our Jewish audience, which is to have faith. These are hard, we've lived to see terrible things happen, October 7th, all the things that have happened in the last year, all the bloodshed, all the terrible things, all the anti-Semitism that is rampant throughout our country, on our college campuses, on the streets of our cities. And it can sometimes seem as if the world is falling apart. And sometimes that seems logical. But I believe in this country. I believe that the overwhelming, the vast majority of Americans are not anti-Semitic. They are friends of the Jewish people. They are against this kind of vicious prejudice. We have we have nothing in our history of official, Jew hatred as every other country has. And more to the point, we have to have faith in the justice of Israel's cause as it fights to defend itself and its people. And we have to have faith that, you know, sometimes, you know, the good guys don't always lose. You know, nowadays, you know, you look in the movies, you know, it's not like the old cowboy movies, the old Hollywood movies of the 30s, 40s, and 50s where the good guys always won. Nowadays, usually the good guys lose, or, you know, the heroes are anti-heroes. We have to have faith in the, just as we have to have faith in American history, American values, and fight those who are trying to destroy Western civilization and American history. We have to have faith that this common fight that Israel is part of, that we're not going to lose it. We're not going to lose this country to these woke lunatics with their lies and myths and deeply divisive ideologies. We have to fight back. We have to keep our, you know, have courage. You know, the most important thing that we need is not just to arm ourselves with the facts of what's going on and, you know, what the media is doing. It's to have the courage to speak truth to power, to speak up and not be silent at a time when, you know, people who are advocating terrible things are so loud and given such platforms in the media. We have to all speak up and have the courage to do so and have the faith to sustain that courage.
We all have that opportunity every single day to speak up for the truth. And I will tell you that the Jewish News Syndicate is helping you to do that because they're providing accurate news and information. And I want to encourage you to go to jns.org, jns.org. You can find out more about what they're doing. And Jonathan Tobin is our guest today on the Middle East Report. Jonathan, thank you for all that you do. I want to encourage people to check out your podcast, Think Twice with Jonathan Tobin. Everybody can subscribe to that. Jonathan, blessings to you, all that you do with the accurate journalism that you present every single day through jns.org. We appreciate our partnership together, getting the truth out. Thanks for all that you do, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do as well.
That's Jonathan Tobin. Please visit their website for accurate, truthful news, jns.org. That's jns.org. Please continue to remember to pray for Israel and the Jewish people. They have launched a ground operation into Lebanon to try to remove the Hezbollah threat there on Israel. I want to encourage you to please pray for everything going on there in the land of Israel. That's the Middle East Report. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to encourage you to get a podcast to this show. You can go to AFR.net, click on the podcast tab, and look for the Middle East Report. That's one way. You can also get the podcast wherever you get your podcast. We're on all the major podcast platforms out there, iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, all of those podcast platforms. Please subscribe and follow me. Thank you for listening.